Hello and welcome back to A Runner's Life podcast. I'm the host, Marcus Brown. I've gone from a 4:55 marathon down to running a sub 3 hour marathon. The idea of this podcast is to explore what a runner's life is by speaking to runners and experts to learn from their experiences and to expand on our own boundaries of what a runner's life could represent. If you want to get updates on the podcast or want to see what I'm up to, follow me on Instagram at @arunnerslife_podcast and at @TheMarathonMarcus, all one word. If you find value in the show, please subscribe and share it with your community and leave a rating on your podcast platform that you use, as it helps the podcast grow. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/arunnerslife. Thank you for tuning in. Now let's head to the conversation. Before we start, I've got an announcement. This is important, so do not fast forward this segment. Sharing what is behind a runner's life is paramount to me. This podcast began without brand support or any external help, so any brand supporting the show would have to demonstrate that they actively support the development of a runner's life in the community. I'm really excited to partner with the sponsors of this podcast, Tracksmith. I want to thank the team for all that they do to celebrate and support the sport that we all love so much. From the quality clothes that they make, to the opportunities they've created from supporting various projects in the Tracksmith Fellowship, through to the content they produce. Check out Tracksmith's Journal, which is a collection of stories, films, photos that highlight and celebrate running culture. Hi Nathan, welcome to A Runner's Life podcast.
Hey, glad to be here.
Do you know, I'm really excited to talk to you. Whilst people know you recently for your recent marathon PR of 2:11 and 5 seconds in the Marathon Project, which is the fastest marathon ever by a black man born in the US. But before that, I mean, what really inspires me is your energy, your work ethic, specifically like when we're going back to the first Olympic trials back in 2016, where you were seeded 37th and you overcame the odds and surpassed everyone's expectations. You finished 23rd overall with a time of 2 hours, 21 minutes and 37 seconds. And now you've gone on to dedicate yourself to compete at the highest level. So I'm really excited to speak to you, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer whatever questions I can and give a little bit of insight to all that too. So just, I guess, ask away.
Awesome. Like I said, it's a conversation, so don't feel like I'm grilling you, so you can put stuff back through as well.
Sounds great.
Okay, so this podcast is called A Runner's Life. What does a runner's life mean to you?
A runner's life, ooh, I mean, there are so many different elements to running to just kind of like condense it into a couple phrases is really hard, but I think the biggest thing that running means to me is just an opportunity to use it to give back and help push others forward and ultimately test my abilities and see just how far I can get. So
there's two great points there. You talked about testing your own abilities, but also giving back. And I know we've spoken about it in other interviews that we've spoken about your mileage being slightly lower than say some of the other pros, and people said to you, well, why don't you just dedicate more time to do that? But on the long side of your running, you work as a substitute teacher as well, so giving back is quite an important aspect of your makeup.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I thoroughly enjoy connecting with kids. I enjoy coaching. And it's one of those things where I don't know if I could, run for 4 to 5 hours a day, but I know I could coach for that long, if not longer. So I really enjoy doing it. And yeah, one of the biggest highlights of my day. So.
And how do you sort of get that balance right between, on one hand, giving back, but also trying to test yourself?
Yeah, it's definitely hard sometimes, right? Because when I'm in this season, especially this year with COVID, I just became the head coach for the high school cross country team, and that is definitely way different than being an assistant. Oh my goodness, it's so crazy. So it's definitely there's definitely points where it's hard, but at the end of the day, I just come back to, well, why am I doing this, and how do I make everything balance together? Because one of the big things too is I want to lead by example, definitely through running. So if I'm telling my athletes, hey, this is what you need to get in, and you need to find a way to do it and push hard, then I better live up to those words and do the same myself. So.
Where does that aspect of wanting to give back come from? Because sometimes you can speak to runners or, various stages or levels, and some can be quite, self-focused. Do you know what I mean? But where does that kind of drive come from for you to kind of actually, on one hand do what's right for you, but then also to kind of give more than, do you know what I mean, give more to yourself and other people?
So I mean it's a little bit of just who I am, but I give a lot of credit to all the different running teams I've been on since high school, college, and even now. Like just in every single point, I could tell that there's a clear focus on team, and that kind of just ingrained itself in me. My high school coach was huge on team. There's a few people who might argue he wasn't the best X's and O's coach, but one thing he did an unbelievable job at was connecting us all together and getting us excited to push and accomplish something. And that was the same case for my college coach, who is my current coach today. Is he really tried to drive home, hey, how do we do this sport differently? And it's not about beating people, it's about achieving what we can achieve and giving back in some kind of way with the gifts we were given. And so I guess that whole process kind of developed my thinking and my framework, and I enjoy connecting with people just in general. So it just kind of all, I guess, came together and how it's working now.
I think it's really refreshing to hear, because especially with running, sometimes it can come across as just being this solo sport, but actually, running and in life generally, being a part of a community, being part of the team is really important.
Yeah, and running, in my opinion, is one of the hugest places to find community. I'm not saying that there's not other sports where you can connect together and figure out a way to accomplish a common goal, but it's just so ingrained into running, right? Like you can have multiple different people at multiple different stages, all come together at a single location and fight for the same goal. And I think that's extremely powerful and is like a really great spirit to have just in general.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. On your Instagram page, you've posted the famous Martin Luther King Jr. quote several times. The one where he talks about, if you can't run, then you walk. If you can't walk, then it kind of goes further until, but basically you just keep moving forward. Why does that particular quote resonate so much with you?
I just really like it because it says like, hey, you know what, life isn't going to be easy, right? But you can't use that as an excuse. And those are the kind of things I want to go and teach to my athletes. And sometimes I drive it home, and sometimes they're just like, you're crazy type thing. But that simplistic ideology is what I think overall, the world needs, because not to get like too far off of running, but there's definitely a lot of issues in the world, and you could say like a lot of things are unfair or a lot of things need to be changed, but at the end of the day, it's how do you respond to those situations that happen to you. And so yeah, I just really resonate with that quote.
Yeah, I really like that because, like you said, life isn't easy. But I think for some people, they find it a lot easier to deal with than others. I mean, how do you kind of deal with that? Because, for example, right now, especially in the UK, lockdown 3.0, I think at the beginning, people were really positive, and I'm just talking generally here. But some people now are finding it really difficult and sort of struggling with the uncertainty, the just the way the life is right now.
Yeah, and like just in general, like the even going to COVID, it's been extremely hard on people. You know, because it's not only is it hard just because things are getting shut down, but it creates just this whole another level of controversy between people, from people who refuse to even leave their house for anything to people who don't even care. And both of them are like, what is the other doing? They're not thinking straight. It's definitely a big issue. And, you know, I'm thankful that we have a vaccine out. In fact, I was lucky enough to just get my first shot of the vaccine. I have two total. So yeah, cross your fingers, don't get turned into a vampire. But I'm hopeful that it helps us push forward and get over things. So.
Well, you never know, if it helps your running and makes you faster, then it could be a good thing.
I don't know if that happened, that would be a whole another issue they'd have to deal with.
Good stuff. And I'm just sort of thinking, like, even with the COVID thing, like, I don't know if this has happened to you recently, but it's created a lot of fear. Like, for example, I was running down the street, and I'm also mindful of just being respectful of people's distances or ages, things like that. So I'll get out of the way, I'll try and make space for them. But I had one dude walking towards me, and he had his mask half on, smoking a cigarette. And then he saw me, then he crossed the road to avoid me. And I'm like, dude, you're like, you're worried that I'm going to be the sort of COVID super spreader, but you're happy to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, no, it's definitely insane. I think it's like, so one thing I heard that I thought was just insane, like, I'm like, what the heck is going on, if that's the correct thinking. There was a high schooler who was complaining about some guy who wasn't wearing a mask, or I can't exactly remember, but who she was like, he had to realize that he looked crazy not wearing a mask. And I'm like, he looked crazy not wearing a mask. Like, what the heck is going on?
It's just a crazy world, isn't it? So I think we're just trying to move forward in the best way that we can. But I'm just thinking, as an athlete, you know, I mean, how do you kind of manage that uncertainty? Because obviously with races, like the bigger races, you know, we're not quite sure whether they're going to happen. And then, you know, there's different events that are happening that obviously can't be sort of broadcast or for invite only, and it must kind of really throw your training out of sync to a certain degree. But I mean, but how do you kind of manage that uncertainty?
Yeah, so it, like, I think, which, you know, I want to be careful and not say that COVID's a good thing, even though there's a lot of good things that came out of it. I guess it didn't really affect my training a huge amount. In fact, I think it might even help my training overall. One thing it did hurt with was the races, because we would target a race. And then, you know, a few weeks before we were supposed to go out, it'd get canceled, and then it'd make us readjust. But we never got so in depth with a race that we couldn't go back to just generalized training. Because besides, you know, before my 211, you know, besides the races getting canceled, I was just having trouble just getting into races in general. Like, my coach tried so hard so many times, and he was just like, you know, I was getting either, you know, put on a waiting list or nobody was responding back. And it wasn't like I was slow or anything. I had ran a 2:14 something previous and had like a sub 47 10 mile race. And so it was like, I don't know if I... you know, should be necessarily, I mean, maybe on a waiting list, but anyways, so I don't think it necessarily, like, affected things too much, but yeah, I definitely felt it, and yeah, so.
Yeah, I hear you, because, like, training still carries on, but I guess it's frustrating, because you're just like, dude, like, I just want to run, I just want to race.
Yeah, no, it was definitely crazy, and I didn't get as frustrated about, like, random situations as my coach did. Oh my goodness, my coach got so frustrated, and it's probably just because of his you know, his mentality towards stuff in general. Like, he's a go-getter, he's going, if he believes something's possible, he's going to exhaust his resources to make it happen, to the point where it'll get him into trouble sometimes. But ultimately it's just because he believes that there's a way to make, you know, something happen. So.
And obviously, you talked about being fairly cool, sort of under the pressure, in terms of just letting things happen. I mean, Where do you think that sort of comes from? I mean, is that something you've always had or something you think you've developed?
I mean, like, I don't want to say I'm like just you know, whatever happens, I don't get freaked out or nervous, because there's definitely situations where I, like, you know, overthink or get nervous and not sure how to respond to it. But I guess my dad was a super relaxed, laid back person, so I adopted more of his personality than definitely my mom, because my mom was not laid back at all. Like, I am saying, my coach was pretty extreme on stuff, but he did not hold a candle to her. So,
and I know we've spoken about your parents in previous sort of podcasts, and it's well documented, so I probably won't go down that sort of aspect as well, because I just want to be respectful of you.
No way.
But is there a part of kind of running history or running culture that speaks to the runner that you are or even aspire to be?
Running history or culture? I guess, I mean, if you go with culture, you know, just a community, everybody fighting for the same thing. And don't get me wrong, I love to compete. I love to race against whoever I'm going to race against and test my abilities against them. But I'm not a person who has to be a certain X person or who has to win the race. If I know I gave what I had, then I'm completely happy. And so, yeah, just the culture of able to be in a sport where you can be competitive, but you don't necessarily have to beat somebody. I really enjoy and like, and yeah, it's really good.
I think that's something I've probably learned more so in the last few years about, you know, just being happy with giving your best effort on the day. Like, you can, I mean, like, the marathon, any race doesn't owe you anything. You know, you can go into it having the perfect training session or training blocks, and you go into it and then something happens and you have to deal with it and you might not get the result that you want. But like you said, like, if you can look back and be like, actually, after being disappointed for a little bit, you can be like, actually, I gave my best effort, so what else can I be disappointed about?
Yeah, and that's one big thing too. It's like, when because of coaching, right, there are days where it just does not go well for my athletes. And there's been definitely points where I'm like, snap, was it the training I did? Was it, you know, random circumstances that I couldn't foresee? Whatever it is, I make sure they don't get too tied to their results, because, you know, once you do that, it's just a slippery slope to where you get to the point where that's all you focus on. And don't get me wrong, that's going to breed some very good athletes, but I don't know if in my opinion, if it's going to breed an overall good mind frame and how you think about stuff. So
it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's like, it can either fuel you or it can like really like burn your house down almost.
Yeah, and like, again, like I said, it's, there are athletes who thrive on it, who you know, they don't get too they don't lose perspective too much, but you know, that kind of thinking to me is just very, very dangerous overall, because it makes you pretty one-sided. Like, you know, people who, if you go to a race and you have to beat somebody, or you say that's my only goal, then they become the enemy, right? They're no longer somebody trying to accomplish the same goal. They're somebody who if they had a bad day and, or, you know, tripped and broke their leg, now suddenly you're happy about that. Because yeah, that obstacle is no longer in your way. And not to say, again, that everybody thinks that way, but, you know, it becomes that kind of mentality when you get that focused into winning or beating X person.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking with your situation where in the last Olympic trials, where, you know, it was hilly, it was windy, it was just like all these sort of things that are combining. It's like, you must be thinking, like, dude, like... Could I catch a break for a little bit? I mean, you come out of that race, I mean, you've done well, but then I guess there's still that kind of a little bit of like, I mean, how do you kind of like deal with that in a practical way post that
yeah, recent Olympic trial? I mean, the 2020 trials was definitely not my day. I mean, you could probably argue that neither trials I've been at, I've done an amazing job at, but yeah, it was just one of those things where not only the conditions on the day were pretty hard, but just the training leading up to it. We knew I had a shot. You know, I'm not saying it was like some guarantee that I was going to make the Olympics, but based on my previous races, it wasn't out of the question. And so we pushed hard for it. And unfortunately, it made my body a little bit tired going into the race. And then so putting that with the course and then just the pressure to feel like I have to perform. Not necessarily have to perform, but, you know, just don't want to let all the people who supported me down and I have this shot. And it all kind of like came together and produced a, you know, not the race, but, you know, I learned from it. And one thing I definitely didn't want to do regardless, especially when I knew the race wasn't going my way, is to flat out give up. So I made sure to finish it. I made sure to push as hard as I could through the race and get through it, because I was like, hey, if I can't accomplish, you know, my first goal, then I'm going to finish and let everybody know I'm still fighting for them and trying to accomplish something. So
it makes sense, because like you said, you're accountable to yourself. You've got your coach and also the athletes that you coach as well. So you kind of want to be a good example to them, just not be like, it wasn't my day, so I'm going to just not show up or I'm just going to quit.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the hope. You know, I don't know how I come off and you know, how people overall view me, but that's my goal. And, you know, I'll, I guess, keep striving towards it. So we'll just see how it goes overall.
That makes sense. So let's move on to racing and the marathon itself. Whilst being focused on your goals, how do you keep the enjoyment in the process?
I mean, the biggest thing is again, I enjoy pushing myself and, you know, I'm a pretty laid back person. So, you know, my coach is the one who's very ambitious and wants to like push towards something. Not to say he does a fantastic job getting my feedback and saying, hey, this is your journey. Where do you want to go? But, I trust him a lot and his vision. So, you know, I kind of let him get excited about, you know, hey, this is what we can accomplish. And I just kind of, ride it through and kind of do what I can. And that helps me out, because it doesn't get me stressed out about, again, trying to accomplish something. It's just like, hey, all I need to do is put in the work. And, you know, I don't want to be one thing I hate seeing, especially being a coach, is wasted talent. And so just knowing or feeling like I'm wasting my own talent is just something just kind of eats at me. So, like, you know, pushing through and knowing I'm putting in good work really fuels me and motivates me to keep going. So
it's going back to that point about wasting talent, and I feel a bit probably unqualified to ask you this, so don't be offended. But when you're sort of running the times and that you're running, and you talked about the mileage being about 80 plus, and you work, you know, obviously you still have got a regular job, and I'm not saying it's easy just to be like quit it and just be a full-time athlete, because a lot of people still struggle to kind of get sponsorships and that kind of thing. But do you think with your talent that you should, and the work ethic, that you should give yourself like a period of time just to kind of focus solely on your running, as opposed to kind of doing that plus the other aspects of your life in terms of helping other people out and being a coach? Do you ever think, well, maybe I should just be selfish?
Yeah, I mean, it crosses my mind from time to time. Like, obviously, you know, how I juggle things isn't easy, right? It's not like, you know, cross your fingers, now I might be looking into different sponsorships and stuff like that. But, you know, before this point, you know, it was like, oh, snap, the way I'm doing things is not generating a lot of money. So do I switch it up and max out my talents and see where I can go? But, I mean, one of the biggest things, too, is I don't want to be so involved in running that my time and how fast I get becomes the only thing I'm worried about, right? And so early on when we were deciding, hey, what's the best thing to do, when I was just getting right out of college, You know, do we just straight try and find a running group, or do we, you know, buy some time, get a little bit faster and have more options? And, you know, through that process, it just wasn't exciting to look at training groups. It wasn't something that was like, oh my goodness, I just need to get a little bit faster. I'm there, or I don't care, find X training group and let's go and do it. And so, like, I started getting into substitute teaching and started coaching, and then instantly I knew I enjoyed doing that. So then the focus kind of shift from, like, hey, how do we just get you to the place we need to get you, to how do we make everything work together and kind of be balanced. So,
yeah. And I'm mindful when I ask you that question before that there's so many layers to it. Like you said, it's not so easy as just to, like, you know, sometimes you've got to do what you've got to do. And sometimes, like, the opportunities aren't available, even though you may feel that you should be at a certain level or whatnot. So, and I guess it's almost like race dependent. So, like, if you do a great race, then you get more attention. But then if you don't have a great race, then you know it's going to be the opposite side as well. So it must be quite challenging on one hand to be, like, super committed all in, but not letting it be your absolutely everything. Because, like you said, then you've got everything to lose if that's all your focus is, just trying to be fast.
Yeah, and it's hard, right? Because it's, you know, I don't want to be a person who wastes my talents or who feel like I didn't achieve what I could. But right now, I feel like I'm in a really good spot and I've done well. And, you know, obviously, you know, hindsight's 2020. Like, if you could go back, you know, 15 years ago when you're struggling and problems are happening and seeing, and you knew exactly where you're going to be at, you'd be like, okay, well, let's just weather the storm because we're going to be fine. But when you don't know that, you're like, oh, wow, am I just making mistakes? Am I just being stubborn about stuff? Am I not thinking clearly? What's going on? But I'm definitely, you know, overall happy with the decisions I've made, and, you know, definitely wouldn't change them. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've got some other sort of thoughts about that, but I want to kind of park that for the moment, because one thing that you've spoken about is just the importance of teamwork, and you've really spoke really highly about your coach, who's been an important part of your running journey. What's been the longest lesson that's probably taken you to learn from him, or even the toughest lesson that's taken you the longest to sort of take on board from your working relationship together?
Ooh, I'd have to think about that. I've been with my coach for a long time. I first met him back in 2006. That was 14 years ago. And yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing, I guess, he's taught me is to just keep fighting, right? I've seen him fight, and he's become a better person overall too. When I first started working with him, like when he recruited me into college, he was, when I say he was a go-getter and really wanted to accomplish stuff, he was even more so when I first met him, to the point where it kind of hurt the team because he couldn't get everybody on board with his vision, and it caused conflict and problems and you know, even to the point where he decided that, hey, you know what, I'm not good to be a college coach right now. So, like, just him fighting so hard showed me, hey, I need to make sure that whatever I'm doing, I know why I'm doing it, so I can fight hard as well.
It's amazing how we get those lessons.
Yeah, just, again, not to, like, expand on my coach too much, but yeah, he's an awesome guy. I without a doubt would not be where I'm at without him. You know, he's ultimately always seeks to do whatever he can for people. Again, sometimes that gets him into a little bit more trouble than he probably wants to be in, but yeah, just seeing that, you know, fuels me to make sure I'm doing whatever I can for my athletes, and yeah, you know, it's been a awesome journey with him.
That makes sense. You recently took part in the Marathon Project and ran a PR of 2 hours, 11 minutes and 5 seconds, and you finished 9th overall. Imagine, say, in an alternate universe, right, a week or two afterwards, and your younger self could come back and it could ask you, your current self, a question about your recent race, what do you think your younger self would ask your current self?
Yeah, okay. I'll try and answer because I have a whole bunch of questions. I do a whole bunch of what if questions myself. And the biggest thing people do is they'll like, once they get sick of them, they'll just try and put holes into them. Well, what about this? So that's like creeping into my head. But so I guess if my younger self, probably one of the things they would ask is like, how in the world did you get so fast? We are not anywhere near you. And I don't know, I'd probably tell them, hey, you just have to keep pushing through and stay consistent and believe in your abilities.
Yeah, but do you think, though, your younger self would listen to your older self, though?
Listen to my older self? Yeah. If I could prove that I was... gosh, you're getting into time travel. This is right up the what if questions I asked. So it's like triggering all these other ones that are gonna like prompt me to go way, way off of what you're going for. What if they listen? I think they would listen. I don't know. I have no idea. I feel like I would listen to myself, but gosh, I can't do these. I'm trying so hard, and it's like I'm like splitting myself to like not just say other stuff.
Oh, that's the stuff we want to go into. I mean, do you do the what if questions then to yourself?
To myself? No, that's not fun. I do it to like other people.
See, it's just a mirror back to you now. You got to do it back.
That's true. I can see why people get frustrated sometimes.
Now, we've spoken about the title. You know, I'm sure it's not something you went out to, who knows, really. But, I mean, now you're officially the fastest born Black American marathoner. I mean, what is it like earning that recognition? I mean, is it something that you find something heavy to hold, or is it something that inspires you to kind of go to new levels?
Yeah, initially it was like a little stressful because I was getting all this attention for it. So I'm like, oh snap, do I have to now keep this record? I kind of like dismissed that early on. I'm like, what in the heck am I thinking? No, I'll do my best. And if I keep the record, great. If I don't, then that's awesome too, that somebody broke it. And initially when I got the record, I was not... I didn't even know the record existed. I wasn't really thinking about it that much. And people started bringing it up. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And that's awesome. I'm going to keep on, trying to push through and get back. And I told that to one guy on Instagram, and he was not having it. He kind of exploded on his message to me. And like, you do not understand, like this and that, blah, blah, blah. This record's huge and this and that. And I'm like, what the? And I'm like, didn't really grasp it up until, again, it started exploding my Instagram and explode my Instagram quotation marks. I went from like 400-ish followers to like 1,000, which is definitely big for me. Some people, off of the Marathon Project, gained thousands. But, I still saw that as, oh, wow, I must have done something great to get all these followers. I see the title as a way to, again, connect back with people. Again, there, I'm not sure how it is in UK. I'm not sure.
UK.
I'm not sure how it is in the UK, but definitely running for the Black population is not a big thing, especially distance running. So just to be able to hold that and be a representation of, hey, if you want to fight for your goals, you definitely can. I think is one reason why it's at least meaningful to me, because I've had some really fast, Black athletes who, and when I say fast, there was a kid who, ran a couple weeks on the track team, in his eighth grade year, and went 5 flat in a mile, right? Which is a crazy amount of talent for somebody who just has no running history and did it as an eighth grader. And we were telling him how much talent he had and his potential, but he just kind of got sucked into football. And from there, he didn't have really great grades, so he couldn't do sports anymore. And there was a point where I think he wasn't even in school, and it was like one of those things, you know, I'm not saying that we would have been able to keep him in school, but, you know, had he gravitated towards running, would he have had a different path type thing?
Yeah. But I guess as well, at that age, like the glamour sports are the bigger ones, like basketball, football, you know, not long distance running.
Yeah, and that's something hopefully I can change. As far as change it as a wide scope, I don't know if I'll be able to pull that off, but just in the community and in the place I coach at, I hope I can change the perspective, which I'm sure like getting the record has a little bit, because I even hear random, you know, kids that I haven't even subbed for. We'll talk about, you know, it's like, oh, didn't you break a record or something like that? I see you running all the time. And just me being there, running all the time and stuff is, I think, definitely helping. And yeah, if anything else, yeah, I just hope that the record helps me reach more kids and get them into the sport if they have talent for it.
It's a great ace to have up your sleeve, you know, especially when someone's trying to say something, you've got a great clap back.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely great for the kids, though, I'd imagine, to hear that and see that in actual reality rather than it being some other dude and another. Because sometimes you can look at long distance running and think, oh, those black runners are just from like Kenya or Ethiopia. It's not people in the States, or it's the same like in the UK. I mean, you don't really get so much people in the UK doing it as well. So I can relate to that.
Yeah, and yeah, which is really funny because up into this record, which I don't know if people perceive me differently now, but you know, I know when I'd go to local races, there'd be random people asking me where I was from, and I'm like, not tell them, yeah, I grew up in Three Rivers, Michigan. They just give me a funny look, like, no, what part of Africa are you from?
It's such a common, you know, thing that I've spoken to other black runners and the same kind of thing, but it's like, but where are you really from? And you go, I'm here. And, but where are your parents from? You're like, well, they're born from here. But okay, but where are your grandparents from? And it's like, how far back do you want to go? So, and you just turn around and look, at some point we all came from Africa. So like, how deep do you want to go into your family history as well? So it's crazy.
How deep do you? Oh, man, that's comical.
But ultimately, though, like, representation matters. And I think, like, what you're doing and being an example is incredible. I mean, you inspire me, and that's why I want to speak to you as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, that's definitely awesome. I mean, that's the goal, is to one, spread running and hopefully motivate people to push past what they thought they could.
Now, you've run a great time, and no one's denying that. But do you think that you've reached your potential?
Oh, no. Not even close. Like, you know, I don't want to come off and sound cocky, but even in that race, I knew I could have been a lot faster. If the race shaped out differently, I wouldn't have been shocked if I could have been upwards of even 45 seconds faster. And my coach is confident that the markers, like, we were training at about 209 pace for most of our marathon bulk work. And again, like, a lot of factors go into that, right? You know, how much mileage overall have you gotten in? How many times have you done marathon workouts? How many marathons have you done to make sure that those paces show up in the race? But even to that level, he's like, hey, you know, we're training at 209 pace, but it wouldn't shock me in the next year if we could train even faster, like 208.30 or even 208 pace. Again, that doesn't guarantee that my next marathon I'm going to be, you know, ready to hit a 208. But, you know, if I'm showing the potential, then I can show up that day and at least believe I have a shot, right? So, you know, I'm never going to be a person who settles and says, you know what, well, I hit a 211, so next step is a 210, then a 209, then a 208. If I'm showing that potential, you know, I'm going to trust my coach, I'm going to trust my body. And, you know, if there's a shot to pull it off, regardless to if it's another 3-minute PR, you know, I'm going to go for it.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's so inspiring and refreshing to hear, really. And, you know, I'm looking forward to sort of seeing, like, what's next. And I appreciate it. I'm not going to go into asking you that because you probably won't be able to tell me that. But I think everyone's going to be looking forward to sort of following your journey as it kind of progresses. Just going back to the recent marathon, in terms of like mindset, I mean, how do you kind of break down the marathon in terms of stages?
Yeah, so I can I can you know, go through the whole race if that's what you're looking for, or just kind of like
awesome.
Okay, yeah, no, I'll break down the whole race at least to the best of my ability off of how I remember it. I'm sure that the how it actually shaked out might be a little bit different, but this is at least my perspective, which, you know, is mine. So I guess I whatever I say is correct, right? But
it counts. You were there, so I got it.
So yeah, just kind of starting off the race, we knew we had 209 potential. So we were like, hey, let's make sure we go with the 209 pace group, two solid pace groups. It was 209 and 211.30. And we had been training again, you know, way faster than 211.30. So it was like that mentality that, you know, going back to that group is more like being cautious, playing it safe. And we knew that we wanted to hit a good time, but we didn't want that to hold us back from having the best day we could. And so we went into it saying, we're going to go with the 209 group. If it doesn't work out, then we'll adjust, but let's not back down to that effort level. And so the race goes off, and right away I try and get to the lead pack, getting into the group, so I'm with them, because just from previous races, I know one thing you do not want to do is try and come from behind to catch back up to the group. And not saying you can't, because there's been a lot of races where I've eaten up gaps, right? And later on, you know, in this race, I'll talk about that. But so yeah, I just wanted to get into the group and just make sure I was ready to fight with them. And so we come through the first mile, and my watch beeps 4:55. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm feeling good. The pace seems great. You know, I'm ready to work with these guys. But it was the first mile for my watch. We were still like 20-ish meters from the actual mile marker. And I was like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. And so instantly, right after that point, I could tell that the pacers just started speeding up. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? But I'm pretty sure it was because they knew that they were away from the official mile mark. And at that point, like, they had measured that course like six different times. So if anything was off, it was definitely our watches. And so they picked it up, and it left me in a bad spot, because I'm like, well, now my watch is saying like 4:40s and stuff like that. And so I'm like, well, do I go with my watch, or do I skip it? I'm going to stay with this group, because they're definitely on 209 pace. And so the trials started creeping into my head a little bit, because even at the trials, it was one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter the time, you stay with the group no matter what. But that ended up not working out the best, because we were also dropping like 4:40s. In that race, and so many people blew up. So I'm like, you know what? I don't know if the watches are off or what's going on, but I need to be smart to make sure I still have a good day. So I just kind of let the group slowly but surely kind of put a gap on me. And so that occurred, obviously throughout the whole race, but definitely it was very noticeable through the first like 3 to 4 miles. And then it was at that point where pretty much after mile 4, maybe 5, I had lost contact with them. And so at that point, I was just kind of racing myself. And it was one of those things where, things start creeping in your head. Like, well, if I stayed with them, you know, it would have been like 2 to 3 seconds easier overall with drafting than to just run by myself. So am I really making a smart decision? But lucky enough, I was able to group up with another guy. If I brought his name up, I was gonna remember it. Dang, I'm so bad with that. John, I'm not even gonna say his name, because I'll mess it up and he might get mad if he listens to this. But I know who he is. I'd have to see his name again though. But yeah, anyways, I want to say around mile 7 or 8. I started grouping up with him, and so I just kind of drafted off of him for the majority of the time I was running with him. And it felt like he was trying to break me. So I'm like, dude, you are the only person around for however, like, even if we're going like 450, I'm not going to let you leave me because I have nobody else. So he was just pushing the pace, and I think we weren't that fast. I think we're averaging like 5 flat, maybe just under, something like that. And so we get to, the halfway mark. And at this point, I was feeling a little bit bad because, I had been drafting off this guy so long that I'm like, snap, I really need to help him out. But just drafting off him is really nice, too. So I kind of go up to kind of pass him, and he doesn't like that. So he pushes a little bit harder. And I'm like, I probably should at least say something, like I was trying to help him. But if he wants to stay in the lead, I'm not going to stop him. So so then around mile like 14 or something, he kind of tells me, John Rainier. Is it John Rainier? I think it's John Rainier. There we go. I'm pretty sure it's John Rainier. Anyways, I passed him because he came up to me and he was like, hey, I've been putting in a lot of work. Could you hold the pace for a little bit? I'm like, yeah, no problem. You've done a ridiculous amount of work, and I'll definitely do that. And so I took the lead, and I think, unfortunately, I sped up the pace a little bit too much because he kind of faded after a couple miles. And, because I guess at that point I wasn't going to slow down, right? You know, I definitely wanted to help him out. But I'm like, well, at this point, it's still my race, and I still need to protect me hitting a good time. But around mile 17 or 18, I had this big old wave of fatigue just kind of come over me, and I started freaking out because I was like, I have so much race left. How in the world am I going to finish at the pace I'm going if I'm getting tired now? But I just told myself I need to take it one step at a time or 1 mile at a time, something like that. Just kind of find a way. And I was lucky enough, like a mile later, or maybe somewhere around 18 or 19, I started seeing CJ Albertson. And I don't know if he wasn't having a good day or he was just trying to be smart, but I got him into my sights. And so from that point on, I'm like, my only mission is to find a way to close the gap on him. I don't care what it takes, but we need to close the gap, because he is the next person I could potentially race, period. Like, and at that point, I started passing a few people who were dying off, but, you know, you're not really racing somebody who's dying. You're just kind of passing them. And so I get to, I want to say it was like mile 21, maybe. I can't remember. Somewhere around there, I had completely closed the gap on him, and it caught back up to him. And I was really excited because I'm like, okay, nice. Somebody to race with. If he pushes the pace, even better, because that's just somebody to draft off of. And I was ready to finish the race. But in all that excitement, I had completely missed my aid station. I guess I wouldn't say I completely missed it, but there was no way I was getting my aid bottle. And so at that point, I'm like, oh my goodness, if there was a crucial point to get aid, it was definitely this aid station. And so I was freaking out because I'm like, either I'm going to survive or I'm going to blow up and have a very miserable death. And so I just told myself again, I'm like, no, I need to shake it off. I missed aid station. I'm still feeling good. I need to just find a way to keep pushing and finish this race out. So at this race, me and CJ were battling for a little bit. And eventually I just, I think I gapped him or something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, I think that was the last person I was going to officially be able to race. So I just need to keep fighting and trying to finish this race. And at this point, it was motivational because I started passing a lot more people who were just kind of dying off, who kind of blew up. And so, towards the last mile and a half, I definitely could tell the effects of not getting that aid, because I'm like, oh, my goodness, my legs are starting to feel like cinder blocks. But I'm like, I have a mile and a half to go. I cannot slow down now. And I just pushed it hard to finish, and ended up obviously being a fantastic day, finishing 2:11:05. And yeah, not gonna lie, like I finished the race and I was a little bit upset because obviously the goal was sub 2:10, and I was like, didn't even break 2:11, which again was not bad. We were happy with it, but it was like eating at me. I'm like, I couldn't have gone like 6 seconds faster somehow. But yeah, overall it was a great day and definitely thankful for it. So
that's an amazing recap, because I think sometimes people can like look at other people and imagine that they have these sort of fairy tale PR races. But like you said, like you started off in the pack, you know, there was the issues with the watch and the GPS, and then the pack pulls off and you're like, do I go with them? Do I stay? You know, be sensible. And then you find someone else. It's like that drafting thing. We've all had those moments where you're kind of like, is it what the right thing to do? But you're like, well, I'm saving myself. And sometimes, you know, people could get into real deep water, these things. And then you're like, you trade over. Then you're like you said, like you're taking over the responsibility. But then at the same time, you can't just like hold back and just be like, all right, dude, you've got to kind of pick up, and you know, or you can't sort of ruin your race for it. And then you talk about the fatigue, missing the aid stations. And I think so many people have been there. Can you just think, man, like you said, am I gonna die like a slow death out here? Because you just know that feeling. And I just love your mindset. You sort of talked about, you know, it was challenging, but you just find a way.
Yeah, and that's one of the mantras I kind of say to my athletes. And sometimes it motivates them, and sometimes they just get really grumpy with me. But yeah, I try and say that to my athletes a lot. So
I like that, because it really sort of encourages you to kind of take the initiative, really, because like life isn't always going to go your way. Racing isn't always going to go your way, but just to make the best next step, even if it's like seems like it's going away from you.
Yeah, and that's one thing too. It's like, even, you know, with coaching, I hope my kids get fast, right? I hope they have unbelievable running careers, but I want to make sure why I'm connecting with them. You know, I teach them a better way to do things, right? You know, I have one athlete, that kid, like, you know, I won't say he's like crazy talented, but he is crazy hard worker. And one of the big reasons is because he flat out wants to be fast. And I definitely want to help him through that journey, but I want to make sure that, you know, he wants to be the best for the right reasons, right? You know, if it's, hey, I'm going to be the best because I'm going to beat everybody and not see people as equals, that's not good, right? But if, you know, he wants to be the best because he knows he has the talent to, and he wants to pursue that, then that's definitely good. So, you know, hopefully I teach some life lessons. You know, I never know how I come off or what lessons that kind of stick to people. But, you know, it's my hope that they learn something from me, and it's a good thing. So,
yeah, do it for the right reasons. I mean, that are truer to you than for external things. Because, like, if you're just trying to go for fast times, then there's never a where does that line ever stop?
Yeah.
It just keeps going on.
Yeah, it reminds me of, and I can't remember the person, so it doesn't matter. But it was like this, I think it was, I forgot what Olympics, but it was like some hurdles or something, or some event. And this, I think one of the hurdlers, she got second, maybe.
Yeah.
And she was getting interviewed, and she just didn't sound happy. She sounded like upset, disappointed, and she's like, I'll be back, and I'll win it. And I'm like, what, you just finished second? Like, you can't celebrate for like a split second? Like, the second's not good enough at the Olympics? Like, you know, like, and again, I get it, like the drive's there and you know you can accomplish it. But, you know, one thing I try and think too is like, just, you know, how many people are trying to fight and do the same thing and they can't, right? And I don't want to dismiss that or you know, just be like, okay, that was a bad day, when, you know, X other person would be like, it'd be their best day ever type thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just being mindful of just to celebrate what you've done. I think that's quite hard for people that are quite A-type and want to be going for the next thing. And that kind of reminds me of what you just said there a little bit before about that 6 seconds. I mean, is that something that, I wouldn't say like it eats you up, but is it something that I guess pops into your mind where you say you're in a run and you're thinking and you're feeling a bit tired and think, man, that's 6 seconds. Is that ever kind of push you along?
I mean, I wouldn't say so. Like, the only reason I was like, snap another 6 seconds was because I knew I had the ability in me. But like the finishing and hitting the time I did, it was like, you know what, this was a great race. And especially, you know, after all the stuff that happened, I definitely made sure to step back and say, whoa, I need to make sure I'm thinking, about things correctly, because again, I don't want to be a person who gets too caught up in the moment of stuff. And like, even in bad races, you know, it stinks to have a bad race. Nobody like is like, oh great, I had a bad race, that was awesome, right? And it'll take me like a day or two to get over it, but after that, you know, I'm not thinking about that race. I'm thinking either about the next step or just whatever's going on a day. So
what is one non-negotiable behavior, habit, or superstition that you do daily?
I have no idea. I don't know if there's anything I just do because I feel like I have to do it. I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess I run every day. That probably makes sense, so.
You know, sometimes it's so easy to overcomplicate this thing, and you've just really just simplified what it's about, really. Nathan, it's been great talking to you. I'm really inspired by what you've done, and you seem like a really humble guy, and I think it's going to be amazing to sort of see where the next stage of your journey goes. Thank you for being a guest on A Runner's Life. But before we wrap up, can you let the listeners know where they can follow your journey online?
Yeah, so there's two big places if you guys want to follow. So the first is just Instagram. So you can just type in my name, Nathan Martin. My handle is NIMIM, which is NIM underscore I underscore AM. Or you can follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group called Nathan Martin's Olympic Trials Countdown. And yeah, my coach has just done an amazing job with it. We have probably last 2 years of information. It's like what races I targeted, what I was thinking leading up to it. I'll get on periodically and just do videos on just a day in general, or how I'm feeling about an upcoming race, or just even a recap on a race. So definitely, if you're interested in following me, then check that out, because you're probably going to get the most detailed information. But if you just want to see, you know, random things I'm just doing on any given day, then, you know, check out Instagram. I post a lot on my story, and yeah, fun stuff.
Great stuff. Nathan, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for being a guest on the Runner's Life podcast.
Yeah, no problem. It's been awesome connecting with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of A Runner's Life. If you found value in this episode and you want to support the show, please share with your community, post on your social media channels, and encourage them to listen and subscribe. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/A Runner's Life. If you want to get updates on the podcast, or you want to see what I'm up to, you can follow me on Instagram at @arunnerslife_podcast and at @TheMarathonMarcus. Your time is valuable, so thank you for spending your time listening to this episode of A Runner's Life podcast.